know them, you love them. It's that time again, Wireless Wednesday. This is wirelesswednesday.live. We're heard in a whole bunch of different places, including wirelesswednesday.live. And once again, this is Rick Limpert, joined by Mitch Evans. Mitch, good to talk to you again.
Hey, what's going on, Rick? Good to speak with you, man.
We kind of didn't do an introduction the last time, so I'm a tech writer. I appear on TV and radio in a few different places, and you are a longtime Atlanta radio institution. So, it's true, and we joined forces again online. And
all right, I'll go with that. A radio institution. Wow, I never looked upon myself as that way, but I like it. I like it.
Yeah, a longtime radio personality here in Atlanta. And Mitch, one thing I loved about doing the segment with you is you always would ask me about tennis. And you don't hear a lot of tennis talk on Atlanta radio or Atlanta sports talk radio. So now I'm going to ask you, as the Australian Open just finished up, a wildly successful and entertaining event this weekend.
That may have been the greatest weekend of tennis that I can remember. And, you know, I could go back to the days when I would go to the U.S. Open when I was still living in New York, and the final Saturday you would have the men's semi sandwiched around the women's final. And that was always just an amazing, amazing day. But, you know, Serena and Venus Williams going against each other in the women's final, and then, you know, Rafa Nadal and Roger Federer in the men's final. Those were two dream matchups for this weekend to start this year of tennis. And certainly the men's final with Federer winning in five sets was something that I think, when all is said and done, Rick, I think that really stole away the attention from the Williams sisters. Because let's be honest, I mean, when the Williams sisters play each other, it's not exactly riveting tennis, correct?
No, it's usually Serena wins in straight sets, and we got that again. But, you know, Roger won up Nadal a little bit, and now coming leading to the French Open, that's going to be a big story. Can Nadal maybe get him back on his best surface? So the storylines and tennis are plentiful. It really was kind of a tournament for the ages. We got to turn the clock back a little bit, but these players are still relevant and the best players.
Yeah, that's amazing. Because, you know, when I go back to the day when I really started first following tennis, and, you know, you're talking about Connors and McEnroe and Bjorn Borg and even a little bit before that, guys didn't play into their mid-30s. And if they were in their mid-30s, it was over. Not so for Roger Federer at 35, certainly Rafa Nadal. He seems a little bit older than 30 because of his style of play and how his body has been racked with injury because of how hard and aggressive he plays. I'm not a big Patrick McEnroe fan, but I thought he hit the nail on the head when he was doing the color analysis on the men's final on Sunday morning when he said that Roger Federer out-Rafa'd Rafa Nadal, because that's what he did. He won the last five games of that fifth set. He was down 3-1 and ended up winning 6-3, and I don't think anybody saw that coming.
Nope, he really did do that. And I guess as we wrap up our tennis talk here, what does that say about men's tennis, though, Mitch? We don't have any young players that are up challenging and beating these guys in the big tournaments, or are these two guys, or, you know, add Murray and Djokovic into the mix, are these four guys just so much better than everybody else that the other guys don't have a chance right now until these guys either get older or retire? I don't know what that says about men's tennis.
Well, I think what it says to me is that these four guys are still the four that are the absolute best. Take age out of it. It certainly seems like Djokovic has dropped off a little bit, but how can he not? I mean, how can you keep it going? And that was always the same problem for Roger Federer, although it never seemed like Federer, until Nadal came along, really had anyone to push him. And for Djokovic, he's got these three other guys that are still around, and for Nadal when he's healthy. So I do. I don't think there's anyone else right now that's out there that you look at and you say to yourself, he's the next up-and-comer. He's the guy that's going to be able to take the mantle from these four guys. I mean, ultimately, it might be Andy Murray who then, you know, only because of age, he's what, the youngest of the foursome, ends up being, you know, the next guy who might win some majors once, you know, the other three are off center stage. But it's going to be interesting for the French Open. If Nadal had won, then that means he's got 15 Grand Slam titles and Federer still had 17 going to the French, which is, of course, Nadal's, you know, favorite surface, the clay. Now it's 18-14, and I think Nadal's going to be hard-pressed to be able to catch up with Roger if Roger never wins another one again. And we've been saying that for years, and all of a sudden here was Federer winning another one.
So I think Nadal at least has one more in him. It might be the French this year. But great tennis. And now that the Australian Open's done, Mitch, I guess there's a little football game coming
really?
This weekend. And for only the second time in
51
years.
Was it another college bowl game? What is it, the 56th college bowl game of this year?
No. Bowl games are finally over, thankfully. But for only the second time in 51 years, Atlanta's got kind of a role in this game. And it looks like the Falcons, so far as the teams have landed in Houston, the Falcons have treated it like a business trip so far. So that's a good sign.
Well, it should be. This is the ultimate business trip. You know, you get to the Super Bowl, especially the way the Falcons have played the last couple of years. You know, it was the 2012 NFC Championship game at the Georgia Dome against the San Francisco 49ers, and the Falcons came oh so close to winning that game and going to the Super Bowl. And then since then, this is a team that's kind of fallen by the wayside. And all the questions about Matt Ryan coming into this year, he has silenced all of the critics. You're talking about the number one scoring offense in the National Football League and the Falcons going up against the number one scoring defense in the Patriots. I think this is going to be a great game. And usually, you know, when I'm looking at Super Bowls, I'm not exactly going to say that. But both of these teams can score. The Falcons have scored 30 or more points 13 times this season, including the last six straight. The Patriots have gone 30 or over 8 times in the regular season and now both of their postseason games as well. If I'm a Falcons fan, I'm worried only from the perspective of you're going up against quite possibly the best quarterback and head coach in NFL history. They're both going for their fifth Super Bowl in this one. And Bill Belichick is known for being able to take away something from the opposing offense. Now, if they take away Julio Jones, consider this. In six games this season, Julio had four catches or less, and the Falcons went 5-1 in those games. The lone loss was in week one to the Bucs. Games with less than 100 yards, the Falcons went 6-1. Games with 100 or more yards for Julio Jones, they went 3-4. So if they take away Julio Jones, this just shows you the great Falcons offense and how dynamic it is outside of Julio Jones with the running game, the other wide receivers, the tight ends. The offensive line has been key for the Falcons at protecting Matt Ryan. Good luck to the Patriots. This is going to be the test for them, the ultimate test for them in going up against Matt Ryan and the Falcons.
Yeah, Julio might be the key, but Falcons with a lot of other weapons, and then New England just keeps seeming to pull weapons out of nowhere each and every year. There's maybe a new guy that's going to step up with Brady. Brady just kind of keeps turning along like an unstoppable machine.
Yeah, so. I mean, you know, he's got Edelman. You know, he loses Gronk, but they pick up Martellus Bennett as a free agent during the offseason. Kevin Hogan has come out of nowhere to be, you know, that second receiver along with Edelman. Hey, they've got Malcolm Mitchell, former Georgia receiver who has really stepped up as a rookie this season.
Yep.
You got to watch out for Deion Lewis. They'll try and soften up the middle of the Falcons' front line by trying to pound LeGarrette Blount. You got to be a little apprehensive in looking at that Falcons defense with, I think, three or four rookies, and you're going up against, you know, Brady, who's a different style of quarterback than what we've seen in these last two games against Russell Wilson and against Aaron Rodgers. Those guys keep plays alive. And if you're trying to rush the passer, you can be able to get to him from the outside. With Brady, you're talking about a guy who stays in the pocket, gets rid of the ball quickly. So that's a totally different challenge for the Falcons. I don't know if they should necessarily look to try and rush the passer with reckless abandon and really maybe rush three and drop back eight to start the game, at least. You know, the Broncos did that to the Patriots in last year's AFC title game. And they had great success against Brady, but of course, you know, that was a historic defense in the Broncos. I'm not trying to equate the Falcons' defense with that, but this defense is much improved in the second half of the season. I know they're ranked 26th overall in defense, but Falcons' defense in the second half of the season did a great job. They did it without Desmond Trufant. Kudos to Jalen Collins. He still makes some mistakes out there, but he also makes plays. Falcons' defense is a bend but not break. I think red zone's going to be key in this game, Rick, for both teams. If they're relying on field goals, that could be the one that determines what happens in this game as opposed to scoring touchdowns.